Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, follow us on Twitter at 937TheFan, driven by Shorty Chrysler Dodge, Jeep Ram, locations in North Huntington and North Hills. We are the Fan Morning Show. We are presented by Matt Mertz Plumbing, and we are at American Natural in Wexford, Route 9, 10, and 79, right here in the exit. Be sure to stop by. First 40 people give you a breakfast sandwich on us. We're ripping through them, so get here quickly so we can get one to you. Michael McHenry in 1 hour. We'll get back into this thing that's going on with Baker Mayfield. I want to continue this talk, though, about the replay just a little bit.
Yeah.
So now there are people on the text line, and they say, you know what, if you've gone this far, it's going to get to the point where you designate a pass interference official to only call that.
Oh, so we're going to have one guy trying to watch the entire field.
It's tongue-in-cheek. They're joking.
I know,
but how far are we going to go to make sure that one penalty – is the people wanting one call are appeased. That is to say, the people in the NFC Championship game and the people that want this one call, that are looking out for this one call. I mean, and I think there's a bigger thing at play here, Chris. Did one officiating mistake, there have been thousands upon thousands of officiating mistakes in the history of sports and even more streamlined in the history of the NFL. Did one mistake at one time serve to change the course of how we're going to officiate NFL games? And it looks like it.
Well, I don't see how this, the way they're trying to implement it is not going to work. It's not. And look, I am fully on board with replay as much as you can to ensure you get things right. But I also don't see how you implement this rule without fundamentally, you're still going to leave things out. You're going to fundamentally end up getting things wrong in the end. And that's why pass interference is such a judgment call. And I understand the call in the NFC Championship game wasn't a judgment call. It was just a blown call, okay? I get that. And I wish there would have been a way, and I still think there can be a way to fix something as egregious as that call without saying, we're going to review every single play for pass interference.
Text us, Edgar Snyder & Associates fan text line, 412-928-9370. Edgar Snyder & Associates reminds you to text responsibly. So in thumbnailing a look at this, in the last 2 minutes of a game, mm-hmm. the proposal is, and it looks like it's going to go through, is to do what again?
It will continue to rest with someone upstairs to decide whether a call should be reviewed or not, or a non-call for that matter, should be reviewed.
But you don't trigger that as a coach.
No, they've decided not to do it that way, which we thought for the last month or so was going to be the process, that coaches would be able to challenge that one specific thing, pass interference, in the last 2 minutes of a half or OT. But then everybody realized, well, all you got to do is wait for a big play and challenge, and you can call pass interference probably on most plays late in a game.
You know what this tells me? Is that, okay, with a minute and 30 left at midfield, that the eye in the sky, the person up in the mm-hmm. booth, if there's a penalty on a pass interference call at midfield, they're going to hit the buzzer. They're going to hit the buzzer because that's a pass interference call. What they aren't going to do is hit it on Hail Marys.
Right.
That's what this tells me, because what they do know is this, that the coaches would have hit it on both, and that they'd be forced to call it on Hail Marys. When they really looked at it, it was obvious.
Or what will happen is, on a Hail Mary, it will have to be blatantly egregious. Like, you'll have to horse collar a guy in the air or something. You know, that's what it'll come down to. And then again, that brings us back to, you're introducing judgment and gray area uh-huh. into a system that you originally are implementing in order to obtain black and white results.
So this is, to travel it through different sports, this is the neighborhood play, right?
Uh-huh.
We know for years that you don't have to step on second base, but this would be like if Major League Baseball said, we're pushing replay in, but we're not going to review the neighborhood play, because we know nobody really touches second base when they turn a double play. But they do have it in. You've got to touch second base now. This, what they're doing is the total opposite in the NFL. We are introducing replay in here. We know everybody commits pass interference on a Hail Mary. So wink, wink, nod, nod. We're going to be right in control of the replay, so we're just never going to look at it.
And again,
that's what's happening here.
The language that Judy Batista quoted yesterday in describing this, the rule will say in the final 2 minutes of each half, the replay official, so the eye in the sky, if you want to call it that, or Al Riveron in New York, will stop play for pass interference under, quote, stricter criteria / guidelines to prevent excessive game stoppages.
Hail Marys. Hail Marys at the very end.
So this is what kills me. And again, as someone who wants to see replay used to make sure calls and missed calls are executed properly, I want to get things right. But that's a black and white thing. And I'm willing to live with part of the consequences of introducing a black and white. Like you said, the neighbor eliminating the neighborhood play at second. I'm fine with that because we all know what it is. We all know you got to touch second. The ball's got to be in your glove, and it's got to be real clear now. You can't introduce gray area.
No, and they're doing that. Or as can be most easily summated by one of our summed up by one of our texters, what the F is this last 2 minute S? I mean, that's the best way to put it.
How many times is something like that going to be said on a sideline by a coach this fall?
Right. And then
What is this?
Yes. What? And, you know, it goes into serve this, too. The value of a play at 2 minutes and 1 second shouldn't be different than the value of a play at 1 minute and 59 seconds.
Right.
It just shouldn't. It shouldn't. All plays should count equal in the course of a football game.
What this is going to lead to a lot more of? I actually anticipate
people
this.
Like me who just want to get rid of replay in totality.
Well, no, because they'll never get rid of replay in totality. But what it's going to lead to is a lot more of the Joe Flacco chuck it down the field and hope for a pass interference call in the last 2 minutes. Like you're third and 18 because you took a stupid sack on second down, and you've got to get a first down. You pull the Flacco, drop back 8 yards. And just chuck the ball to someone streaking down the sideline and hope to buy a defensive pass interference call.
All right, one football team right up the road in Cleveland. Are they going through nonsense, or are these just growing pains, or is this a non-story? Because there's more with Baker Mayfield. Apparently some teammates aren't happy with him. We talk about that coming up next. Stop out and see us. We're at American Natural. We're having a great time. American Natural, 910 and 79 right here in Wexford. Stop by, and your breakfast sandwich is on us. All right, Fan Morning Show Porch Tour, broadcast from your house, your porch, your pool, whatever it may be. Register now, 937thefan.com. June 28th, that's the first date. Yeah, 2 weeks from today. You're right about that. July 26th, August 16th. Those are the dates. So register now, brought to you by Gutter Helmet, Old Smoky, Iron City, Fanatic Impressions, Permane Brothers, and J&D Waterproofing. Just register, and you're registered for all three. Even if you don't get the first one, it's still good for the next two. And, just host us. We bring the food and the fun and the beer and all that, and especially Jim Colony. All right, our regular producer, Matt, is on his way back from Colorado. The other producer, Matt, is back in the studio. And I ask you, other producer, Matt, do you have that Baker Mayfield audio from earlier in June? You have that ready to go? Yes. Well, then go ahead and play it. Why don't you?
You know what? That's something that we've been dealing with for a while. If we have guys that want to be here, they'll show that, they'll voice that. Obviously, you know, he's going to handle his stuff how he wants. But you're either on this train or you're not. It's moving. You can get out the way or you can join us. So it is what it is.
All right, like ludicrous aside, is that who that was?
Get out the way.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, him aside, quoting him aside, this Baker Mayfield stuff, apparently it's now come to the surface where some veteran members of the Cleveland Browns were not happy with Baker Mayfield in those comments. See, I kind of come down in the middle. He's speaking the truth. People want truth.
Yeah.
The media wants truth.
And
he gave them truth.
He's trying to be a leader.
I also come down on the what's in the locker room stays in the locker room, and you should always align yourself with your teammates and not necessarily the management and the man. Like, you always want to look like you're marching with the soldiers, right?
Well, I think it's there's not a total parallel here, but bear with me for a second.
Sure.
I think there's some similarity to what happened when Le'Veon Bell was called out by his teammates last year. Now, a lot of that had to do with the fact that he had just straight up been dishonest with them and said, I'm going to come in at this day and time, and then didn't. But there were some guys in that room that still had his back.
The big difference in why I think that those are totally different, why Baker Mayfield should have had the back of his teammates, is because Duke Johnson was there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's what I mean. It's not a total parallel.
Is that he was there. And that's why I don't vilify the Steelers for going after Le'Veon Bell at the time, because he wasn't there.
But in the way that there are some guys in the room that are still going to have one guy's back, and there are some guys in the room that are going to say, hey, get with the program or get out.
Yes. And so he is now being taken to task by some of his teammates who say, hey, don't air our public business. Hey, have the back of your guy. Hey, don't. So the bigger story for me is there's already nonsense in Cleveland between the OBJ stuff, between the Baker Mayfield stuff, between Freddie Kitchens calling out OBJ in the past over the offseason already. Can they handle this pressure, and can they then handle it when there's an application of football to be played and they're already in the offseason and there's all this nonsense? I got my serious questions.
Okay.
That people are handing them the AFC North trophy and handing them a run through the playoffs and handing them a good season, and we want, because we saw a better Steelers team talent-wise, I think, melt down under the pressure of infighting.
Yeah, I think, look, I'm not going to sit here. I'm not on board with the Browns are a Super Bowl contender. All right, I'm not even necessarily on board yet with the Browns could be a playoff team. And the Browns are going to be better, though, than they were previously. The question will be, how much of this stuff can they withstand? And when you look at their schedule, it all builds toward the middle of November and that Thursday night against the Steelers, because they will have had a couple of tests up to that point, right? They will have had to go to New England in week 8 off of their bye, so they'll have some extra time. They will have had the Ravens and the Rams, but by that point, we'll kind of have an idea of what the Browns are. And if they've been able to withstand it to that point, those Steeler games are what decide their season. Two Steeler games, and what's it end up being? Something like 15 days. That's what will decide. And that's why I think
decides both team seasons.
Yeah, and not only do I want to see the Browns remain viable long enough that those two games mean something, but I want them to hold it together for this rivalry. Because this rivalry, I'm sorry, as someone who grew up in the 80s and the 90s,
I want them to be better.
I want them to be good. I want November 14th on a Thursday night between the Browns and Steelers, and then again 2 weeks later at Heinz Field on December 1st. I want those games to be for the division.
I want the Steelers to be better. I want the Browns to be better. And then I want the Steelers to bludgeon them at the end of the season and dash all their hopes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I want. All right, coming up next, leave it to Mark Caboli to make a lot of sense. He had one of the better sentiments in all of sports yesterday that I saw around the Twitter sphere.
Okay.
There's that, and then I guarantee one receiver in the NFL is mad because the odds are out about NFL MVPs, and another receiver has better odds of being the NFL MVP. Mm. Give you all that this hour here. We are out here at American Natural in Wexford, 910 and 79. Stop by and see us. Grab a breakfast sandwich. This is the Fan Morning Show. All right, good morning to you. We're at American Natural in Wexford. We have Michael McHenry coming up in just 1.5 hour. Mark Caboli, he sometimes makes the most sense in the world, and he did yesterday on the Twitter sphere.
Okay.
This was spectacular. I don't have the exact tweet in front of me. I don't need to. He said, I keep hearing game 7, there's nothing like a game 7, because there was in hockey and there was maybe going to be in basketball until it was closed out last night by Toronto. And you do hear a lot about that. And I'm not going to undersell the excitement of a game 7, because it is very exciting. But he said, there's nothing like the excitement of a game 7. Well, how about every single moment of every single NFL playoff game that's ever been played? And he's right.
I get it.
He's dead right about that. It has the exact same consequence.
Well, because it's an elimination game. Every game in the NFL playoffs is an elimination game.
He's right. It's just because of the journey to get to that game 7, I think, in a series,
right,
of why people build it up and talk about it differently. But in the sense of what there is to lose, so to speak, it's the exact same.
Yeah. There's a weird build-up.
You don't hear
though.
The romanticism with an NFL game, an NFL playoff game, as opposed to a game 7.
It's true. I don't know if it's because of the build-up to a game 7 in a series. Like, you've already had 6 games worth of drama leading up to it, and a back-and-forth in some cases. But it's a really no, you're right. And Mark's right. It's every single moment of an NFL playoff game is edge of the seat, because there is no game 2.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all. That's the series. It's 4 quarters.
It made a ton of sense. So big shout out to Caboli. Kaboom. for that, because you know, probably 60-70% of his tweets I look at and go, what is this guy talking about? And then some of the times, there's about once every 2 weeks or so where Mark Caboli is the absolute voice of reason, and he was yesterday.
Probably more often than we'd like to admit.
The one thing that Twitter has really, though, pushed forward in the world is the you got to pick a sport, you got to pick this, you can't just like everything.
Stick to football,
Caboli. Right. Well, like, I like everything. I like hockey, I like basketball, I like football. Like the NBA versus NHL stuff.
Right.
Why can't I like both?
No.
Only
one.
Twitter has really forced that forward.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to like multiple things.
You're
going
to
like this. You got to shout about it. You got to stay on this
social
side.
Social media. Everything I like is right, and everything you like is wrong.
Right. Right. And it's exhausting at times. All right. The odds are out for the NFL, at least from Caesars, for the NFL MVP. Wait till you hear who has better odds than a different guy who plays the same position. Wait till he hears when he wakes up today. And a happy good morning to you. Great to see our friend Eileen, friend of the show, friend of all the shows. She's out here getting a breakfast sandwich. A lot of other people getting their breakfast sandwich. Matt, who went to Penn, he's the biggest Penn fan there is.
Yes.
Not Penguins, but Penn.
Penn.
Went to the University
P-E-N-N.
Of Pennsylvania. Yes, he's out here. He's getting
Ivy
his breakfast
League.
Sandwich. Yes, he's a smart guy. So you can see us, American Natural, Wexford, 910 and 79. Stop by and see us. Okay, I noticed this last night on the Twitter machine.
Okay.
Caesars. Somebody put this out. Because Caesars doesn't put out their odds straight away on the internet like this. They won't post a sheet from the casino.
So somebody posted the sheet for
from
them.
Yep, from Caesars Entertainment, right?
And okay.
The odds came out in Nevada yesterday for the pro, because they can't use the word NFL,
the
right?
Pro football
MVP award, right? So the player to win 2019, Patrick Mahomes is 7-2. He's the favorite. Then you got three guys at 7-1: Brady, Wentz, and Rivers.
Wentz?
Yeah, right. Then Andrew Luck at 6-1. Rodgers and Mayfield just behind, along with Russell Wilson. Then you got a group of guys all around the same: Breeze, Ryan, Goff, Deshaun Watson, Roethlisberger. Then you start to get a little bit of the longer shots at 50-1: Ezekiel Elliott, Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, Dak Prescott, Cam Newton, Kirk Cousins, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota, Nick Foles, Saquon Barkley. Those and Jimmy Garoppolo. Those are all your guys right around the same spot there.
Uh-huh.
And Le'Veon Bell and Todd Gurley. A couple receivers, though, that you really want to pay attention to.
Oh, here we go.
Antonio Brown is 150-1 to win the NFL MVP.
Okay, what's Juju?
100-1.
Oh, no.
He is going to wake up today, look at that, fly to Nevada. Because that's going to be his new home next year.
Yes.
And he is going to be thoroughly upset that Juju is more of a favorite.
Get ready, Gruden.
You know where the money is on this? Is the field at 30-1.
It really is.
Somebody coming out of nowhere to win the MVP.
Like, some of these are like, I'm sorry. I don't care if 60-1, Jameis Winston?
Come on. There is some that are.
I know those are big odds, but why even put him on the sheet?
How about Baker more than Ben Roethlisberger? Rivers at 7-1 and Roethlisberger at 30-1. Give me that action all day. Absolutely all day, I think.
Carson Wentz at 7-1 is a sucker bet.
It is an awful, awful bet. I would bet Nick Foles before anybody.
Okay, if you had to take somebody, you can't take the field. And you got to take somebody who's 50-1 or greater.
Okay, 50-1
50-1 or greater. So Zeke, McCaffrey, Kamara, Prescott.
Saquon Barkley.
That's exactly who I was going to say. Exactly. I could see Saquon Barkley is the kind of guy that Eli Manning could be out there with two broken legs.
Yes.
And he simply just takes the ball, pivots around, and puts it in Saquon's stomach 35 times.
Gets into this with Saquon Barkley. Are they willing to go for a guy that's on a bad team or just an okay team that puts up ungodly numbers?
Well, if the Giants went 8-8,
uh-huh,
and we're in the conversation until the final week of the season, and Barkley had 2,000 yards, he'd get votes, and justifiably so, because he's going to be one of the few redeeming qualities of that team.
But that's the guy that I see, for sure.
Yeah.
I think that he could be that guy. There are some on here that I don't get. Like, if you walk into the season, Baker Mayfield is 9-1, and Roethlisberger's 30-1, I mean, am I missing something? I know that Baker Mayfield's going to be really good. I know that the Browns are much improved. I understand all the talk. And look, some of it stick in what I say about the Browns. I know they're going to be better. I know that they're going to be not the Browns of old. I don't think they're the Super Bowl champions some are making them out to be. But you're telling me that you think Baker Mayfield's going to walk in the season and be have as just as good a time of getting the MVP or just as good odds as Aaron Rodgers? Come on, man.
I'm really tempted to drive right down to Rivers today after the show and put just $10 on Saquon and just keep my fingers crossed that it comes in somehow. $600.
Yeah, boom. It's really interesting. But I can't wait. You know AB is going to pay attention to this because he pays attention to everything. He is the champion of the looking to be offended crowd. When he's the guy who there's no reason he should be looking to be offended by anything. He's reached a point in life it shouldn't bother him.
He's the centerpiece of a team that's going to be moving to one of the most recognizable places on earth next year.
Right.
He should be ecstatic with where he's at.
I agree. Coming up next, what do you want from the U.S. Open? That is to say from a score standpoint. Was it too easy yesterday? You know, we watched, and it's great, absolutely great happy hour viewing now.
Yes.
That time of day, it's perfect. Love having it on the West Coast. Do we want to see guys suffer, be awful, just look and have this look of dismay after they hit iron shots and they don't hold, or have guys three putt everything and finish it one over around par? Or do we want to see what we saw yesterday and Justin Rose come in with birdie, birdie, birdie and finish like five under? What do you want to see from a U.S. Open course? Let's get into that coming up next here, Fan Morning Show. All right, Michael McHenry, top of the hour, 9 o'clock. So excited to talk to him, the Fort. We're at American Natural. Come by and see us. Grab a breakfast sandwich. We'll be here until 10 o'clock. First 40 people grab them. We're running out. So get here right now. 412-928-9370. All right, the low round, I didn't even count them. Here's all you need to know, I think. And I don't watch a ton of golf. But Tom Hoge, who's that?
Huh?
Yeah. Anybody, H-O-G-E, right?
He's even par. Is that Merrill's new name since
forgot
his?
Tom Hoge. He's even par. He's even par. There's too many guys that are even par.
3 leaders at 5 under, right?
Eric Van Rooyen. He's even par.
Do I have that part right?
Yes.
Okay.
There's too many people at even par.
Well.
Or above.
I think this is what I got from the first day. And again, not a great golfer. I get out like twice a year, if that. But what I got from the first day is that the weather was simply really good to them yesterday. And that unless you were hitting drives all over the place, which Koepka started to get a little sloppy on the back nine, you're going to be okay as long as you landed in the fairway. And you're going to be able to set yourself up. I'm curious to see what happens if they get some weather blow through in one of these last 3 days. And it doesn't have to be crazy, but you get some of that wind off the coast there, and it can look pretty crazy really quick. And when balls start flying all over the place, that's when it'll get interesting. I don't know if we end up with a winner in like double digits under par, but look, part of me does want to see the pros not struggle, but have to figure some things out because they're in some of the most difficult conditions of their career.
Well,
that's part of what
the
U.S. Open is
about. Was just too low for me.
But part of it, too, is I want to see good golfers make good shots. And part of that is you can't do that on a course that's just been absolutely butchered and dried out to bits, which they've done in the past.
Yeah, but they had said, I guess, that they put sort of almost 2 times the water that they generally put on courses. They
very
done
soft
that
yesterday.
They made it way too soft. Now, the USGA has a way of, and they take care of these championships, the USGA has a way of after – kind of in midstream saying, wait a minute, this is a bit much. Okay, let's now bring it back to our side and swing it back and maybe making Friday and Saturday really, really, really tough. Let's see if that happens.
Well, and that'll be real easy to do. I think Rory said it yesterday after his round. If they want to.
57 guys at even par are better.
Man,
57.
But real easy. Just don't water the thing. Like, seriously, just let it dry out a little bit today. And by later this afternoon, you'll see that. Just what it'll be like watching guys try to putt on one of those Lego boards that your kids build Lego houses on.
Like, when does Kenny G and Ray Romano go out there and fire one?
When's Bill Murray take old ladies out into the sand trap?
It's a bit much. I like to see. There are a couple things that I like to watch in golf throughout the course of the year. I like to watch the U.S. Open, and I like to watch the British, and I like to see forced shot making because of the conditions. And by conditions, I don't mean rain and wind and sideways, whatever.
Right.
I like to see guys think that they have a shot that's going to land dead center. I'm just going to play at the middle of the green. It hops off because it's absolutely – it's not a hard pan, but it's just real quick.
Or
they putt in it and they feel like, well, this is either in or it's 8 feet past, and it's a three-putt coming back.
But what I think we saw yesterday, and I'm on board with that. Like, I don't mind seeing a U.S. Open champion at two over. I really don't mind seeing that because of some of the tournaments, some of the conditions we've seen at Oakmont in the past. And I think that is, that, to be quite honest, that's the U.S. Open at its best sometimes when guys struggle just a bit. But I also think what we saw yesterday was it's a difficult course. Make no bones about it. As soft and slow as it was yesterday, it's a difficult course. And I think you saw it from Spieth. You saw it from, like I said, Koepka on the back nine. You've got to make your shots. And if you don't keep it in the fairway, you're going to start to get in trouble real quick.
Albeit it was under different circumstances, but I wonder how much the Phil Mickelson putt a moving ball incident had to do with them reevaluating. And everybody that runs a tournament that is a really tough tournament. I'm not talking about where they go somewhere and shoot, you know, the winner ends up at minus 28, but where they go somewhere and it's right around par at the championships, mm-hmm. at the British, at somewhere like that, at the PGA, if they reevaluate and say, oh, were we making it too tough? Like, did he make his point? Did he make a statement for everyone?
And I think Shinnecock being just a bloodbath for 2 days last year is part of that, too. There is a certain attraction, like we keep saying, like you, and this is the point of the U.S. Open. There is a certain attraction to seeing the pros, the best in the world, have to struggle and have to make, quote-unquote, perfect shots. There's also something I think attractive about watching the best in the world play not flawless golf, but simply keeping it in the fairway, doing the things that you wish you could do on any given weekend, and you look at it and say, man, I mean to do that all the time.
The latter bores me.
But those guys can actually do it.
The latter becomes like a home run hitting contest to me. I'd rather watch a game that's well played and that's 2-1 and watch strikeouts and things. I don't want to watch. And it's just a matter of preference.
Yeah.
But I can see you, the one that you described.
Right.
That's every other week on the PGA Tour.
I get it. Yeah, I do.
So that's why give me a couple weekends a year where I see guys that I'm like, oh, okay, they're at Carnoustie. Oh, okay, they're at, you know, Royal whatever the hell, and they're playing this, and this guy is in a bunker and I can't see him. Okay, I like it.
Or they're at Royal whatever the hell with Duchess What's-Her-Face.
Right, or they're at Oakmont, or they're at Pebble, or they're at Shinnecock, or they're at Whistling Straits.
I think it's going to come back to center the rest of the weekend, though. I really do. I don't think we end up seeing a winner like 15 under or something like that. They won't let that happen.
I do like, you know what? I underestimated how much I would like it. The happy hour type viewing time, though, was so wonderful last night.
And it wrapped up just about the time guys like us who get up at 3 in the morning are usually going to bed. That's what was perfect about it.
Yeah, it's and then you get these people like on the text line. Do you guys want to see Crosby play on bad ice or the Steelers play on a bad field? No, I don't. And there's nobody's at risk of getting hurt outside of in the rough if it gnarls over a little bit with a little wrist action like Phil whined about at Oakmont.
Which actually is more likely this weekend because the rough is so
thick. Nobody runs the risk of really getting hurt. They just run the risk of being really challenged, I think. And I'm okay with that. All right, top of the hour, Michael McHenry. Love being joined by him, and we are going to be joined by him coming up in just a few minutes. Fan weather, we're joined by great weather. Fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevrolet and McMurray. Sun's shining right now. Time for Sun's summer sizzling sell-down event today. Going to be mostly sunny, breezy, really beautiful out. 73 for a high, partly cloudy, low of 56.
That's the weather.
There we go. Yes, it is, Paul. Okay.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.